It's time for Money for Lunch, where we feed your brain and your business with supersized portions of business and financial news. Now your host, Bert Martinez.
Hoo-ah! Welcome to Money for Lunch. Hey, I wanted to do a quick shout-out to my friends Joe Mantegna and Gary Sinise. A lot of people don't know this, but they put on this tribute for veterans and their families, and I forgot to put it in my show notes, so I'm going to have to look it up here live on the air. I know, it's incredible. Let's see. And I'm trying to find out, let's see, where they're having it at for you. The memorial, it's the National Memorial Day concert. It's going to be hosted by Gary and Joe, and it'll be broadcasted on PBS, and it'll be carried, and it's live there from the nation's capital. Those guys do a great job. Gary Sinise does an incredible job helping out veterans, and looking forward to having him on the show. And I've been, encouraging him to come on, but we've yet to make it happen. So we'll see. Today's quote of the day is by Beverly Sills. There are no shortcuts to any place worth going. There are no shortcuts to any place worth going by Beverly Sills. Today on the show, we have Dr. Steve Bistritz. Steve has more than 40 years of high-tech sales management, and training management experience. He is a best-selling author of Selling to the C-Suite, now in its second edition, and speaker in the field of sales management, and selling to executives. Steve spent more than 27 years with IBM in sales and training, and is currently the president of his own sales and training consulting firm, CellXL. Ooh, I like that, CellXL. Dr. Steve Bistritz, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Well, thanks. It's great to be with you today, Bert. And I'm excited to share some insights with your listeners today.
Absolutely, absolutely. So let's talk about this. Let's just jump right into it.
Sure.
With your, with your experience and what you've seen, what do you find are some common mistakes about C-level executives and how they can create problems for those who attempt to, let's say, contact them or sell to them? Talk about this.
Well, I think, C-level executives are pretty open to discussing things with salespeople. In fact, we did research with CXO-level executives where we asked them about their relationships with professional salespeople. And I'll never forget, one of the practice interviews we did was with the CIO of a company who your listeners would recognize, the name of which your listeners would recognize, but I won't repeat it here. And he was kind of, doing us a favor and trying to help our research project along the way. And, I had an MBA student with me, and he asked a lot of the questions we had put together for this project. And when we were done with the questions, I said to the executive, I said, "Now, Jim, tell me why an executive at your level would ever want to meet with a professional salesperson." And what he said to me really astounded me. He said, "Steve," he said, "I meet with professional salespeople because often they can offer me solutions that even people within my own organization can't develop. They've seen these kinds of problems in other companies, and they have addressed them with their solutions. And I want the benefit of their experience and their knowledge." And how that validated me as a professional salesperson, I'll never forget it. And I talk about this in my book, and I have that quote in my book. So C-level executives are open to meeting with salespeople, but the salesperson has to know a little bit about their industry, their company, and about the client executive himself or herself before that meeting. So they've got to do their homework, and they have to listen to the executive before they propose a solution. Don't go in there with your products or services looking for a home, if you will. Go in there trying to solve the customer's problem and trying to deliver value to that executive. That's what they're looking for. So that's
sure,
a long-winded
sure.
answer to your question. I'm sorry.
No, but that's you know what? That, to me, that's a great answer. And one of the things that I take away from that answer is that it sounds to me like these high-powered C-level executives are really no different than anybody else out there. If you can bring a solution to them that they need, if you've done your homework, then they might be open to listening to what you say.
You got it. But this is a quote that I hope you can use in a future broadcast. And that is that executives buy not when they understand, but when they feel they are understood. And I'll say that again.
Ooh.
Executives buy not when they understand, but when they feel they are understood. So as I said before, you want to make sure you listen to them and understand their needs and requirements before you propose a solution to them.
Yeah, no, I love that. I love that. All right, so let's talk about, you know, let's say that,
sure.
you know, somebody listening says, hey, you know, I'm in the B2B space. I got to contact these
yep.
C-level executives. And now they're encouraged to know that these C-level executives don't mind being contacted. And I could just hear them saying, okay, so, well, see, what's the best way to gain access to these, you know, C-level executives? How, you know, how can I, you know, how can I reach them?
Great, great question. And you know what executives told us when we asked them that question? They said the best way to reach us is through somebody else in the organization who provides them an introduction to the executive. That could be a lower-level executive. It could be a lower-level manager. And most importantly, it can be the gatekeeper. So again, what I tell salespeople is treat the gatekeeper as a resource. And I take that one level higher. I say treat the gatekeeper as if he or she is the executive himself or herself. Because I can't tell you how many times gatekeepers have helped me get to executives. And that's by treating them with deference, with respect, and treating them like executives. And, you know, gatekeepers often understand what's on the mind of the executive. They know what's important to that executive. They know how to reach that executive. And if you can convince the gatekeeper that you have a solution that can deliver value to their organization, maybe by showing them or talking to them about how you've helped other companies solve similar types of problems, you may be able to get access to that executive through the gatekeeper.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. And you know what? You and I have probably both seen this, and I'm sure everybody is at one point either seen this or done this, and it's usually happens with, let's say, untrained, unsophisticated, newbie salespeople. You know, and sometimes I'll even use the word prideful salespeople who will interact with the receptionist or with the admin, and they do not respect these people. They don't treat them kindly, and you'll lose the sale immediately. I can tell you,
exactly.
Ladies and gentlemen, from my own experience, when my admins come to me and they say, hey, this person wants to talk to you, but they're real jerks, I won't give
right.
them the time of day.
Exactly.
You know, because, you know, look, we all are in business to make money, but you know, we have to be respectful and kind to everybody, not, quote, just the important people that we want to sell to. And at this stage in the game, if you as a salesperson or as a business person don't understand that you have to be kind and respectful to everybody, then I think it's going to come back and bite you in the butt.
Yeah, you don't know who you're going to encounter when you go into the client organization. You know, when you go into their building or their location, you want to treat them with deference because you don't know who that person is. You don't know who they're connected to.
Yes.
I always am reminded of this article I saw in the New York Times. It was in the business section on a Sunday morning, and I'm reading this article, and it's about the CEO of a company talking about how she would interview people for people who would report to her, for positions that reported directly to her. And after the interview, she would go out to her administrative assistant and say to that person, how were you treated by that person? I want to know how that person treated you. Because that shows that executive your character, and you don't want to lose a deal or lose the opportunity for a job because you badmouth some administrative assistant on the way to see the executive. It's not the way to do it.
Right. You know, there is a meme, if you will, and I don't know if this is true or not. I don't know if somebody made it up, but to me, it's a great lesson in life. And so the situation, it's a Twitter meme type thing. And so the situation is this individual kind of cuts this gentleman off, and this is in the parking lot, kind of cuts him off and shoots him the bird and – you know, and then of course he hustles into the building. Well,
right.
the gentleman who was cut off, he finally makes it up to his office and he's of course a little frustrated and whatever. And of course his next appointment just so happens to be with the guy who just cut him off and shot him the finger. And
right.
The whole meme is called karma, right? And so it's just one of those things. Back to what you said, you just never know who you're interacting with, who you're really interacting with, and you don't know how that relationship's going to evolve. So it just makes sense to just have a rule of thumb that you're going to treat everybody with,
exactly.
With that level of dignity and kindness that we all want to be treated with. All right. So let's talk about this. So now we know that. You know, we can contact these executives. They're looking to be contacted with solutions. We've talked about some of the best ways to gain access to the executives. And now my next question is, how do you go about identifying the relevant executives for the sales opportunity?
Right. Well, the first thing you have to look for is who's responsible for the project or application that's associated with your sales opportunity. In other words, what you have to really do is sit on the other side of the desk and view your opportunity from the perspective of the client. And what client executive has their neck on the line for this particular project? If that project goes well, who in the client organization will gain or lose based on the outcome of the project or application that's associated with your sales opportunity? And therein lies your clue to that person who's what I call the relevant executive for the sales opportunity. Because that executive will possess a level of informal power and influence that can be exerted over the buying decision. And even if a formal buying decision has been made, that executive can come in and change it because their neck is on the line for that particular project or application. So if you gain access to that relevant executive, the executive who stands to gain the most or lose the most as a result of the outcome of the project or application that's associated with your sales opportunity, that's the person you need to get to.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that. I like that. You know, one of the other things I want to touch on is, you know, there's a lot to be said, or there's actually a lot being said, I should say, about the impact of, you know, of digital natives, I think is the way they're referred to now, reaching, you know, the boardroom or the executives or whoever you want to reach. What's your thought on this? Talk about this a little bit.
Yeah, well, I define digital natives, or we define digital natives, my co-author and I, as those kinds of executives who have grown up knowing nothing but online, mm-hmm. you know, online access to everything, okay? So they're natural using LinkedIn, they're natural using Twitter, they're using social media. So you have to have a presence on LinkedIn because they're looking you up on LinkedIn before you meet with them. Just as though, and, you know, you need to do your homework and you need to research that client executive. Look them up or her up on LinkedIn, and I would bet that you will find that they have a presence there. And find out who they're connected to. Find out if you know people who they have worked with in previous other positions in other companies, or perhaps you know some people who they are connected to today. You may have mutual contacts, okay? And you could touch base with one of those people and get some insight into the executive that you're going to call on. But most importantly, make certain that you have a professional LinkedIn profile. Take a look at my profile on LinkedIn. You know, you can see that I, in that profile, show the executive the type of value that I can deliver to him or her if they use my services. And that's the kind of thing you need to do, because we found out in our research that nearly 70% of executives, senior executives, are using LinkedIn. And they'll research you before you get to their front door.
Yeah. You know, and what's interesting since you brought that up is, isn't it, I don't know about you, but it's really frustrating for me when I'm trying to do some research on a company and they're just not there. They're not on LinkedIn, or the person that you're trying to identify is not on LinkedIn. And it's just like, you know, it almost makes you wonder the level or the sophistication of this company, because they're like nowhere.
Yeah, right. Well, most executives, you'll find most executives on LinkedIn today. I mean, and I'm very active in that because, in fact, I just posted another article this morning. I was one of the first million users of LinkedIn, and now there are more than a half a billion users of LinkedIn throughout the world. And you know, if you're in the business-to-business selling space, you've got to be active on LinkedIn. And you have to have a presence there. So make certain that you're optimizing that, because if you're not, your competitor is. And if they're researching, you know, your competitor, and they find out that they have a presence there and they see something they really like, you're going to be, quote, out to lunch. So, you know, take advantage of these kinds of situations and opportunities and optimize them for yourselves.
Sure. You know what? And I failed to mention the name of the book. For those who may not have guessed by now, it's called Selling to the C-Suite, available at Amazon or wherever good books are sold. And what do you call it? And I think this is one of those areas that, people really need to study up on or train on. You know, one of the things that took me a long time to understand that, you know, the people who are the best in the world are constantly training and rehearsing and drilling, and that's what keeps them the best in the world. So if you are, again, in the B2B space, or maybe you want to maybe reach out to C-suite executives for other purposes, this is a great book to get. And you're always sharpening your tools. You're always trying to get better. I mean, that is, I think, the key to, never-ending, continuous type of success.
Right, exactly. Well, just like, you know, spring training is a natural for Major League Baseball players. It happens every year. So spring training for a baseball player, for athletes, they do it every year. And, you know, I want to touch on one other thing as we're talking about this, because a lot of times salespeople will say to me, well, how do you gain credibility with an executive? And what I say to salespeople is credibility is the intersection of capability and integrity. And you've really got to demonstrate both to operate in what I call the client value zone. And this is where you can become perceived as that trusted advisor. In other words, you can show that executive that you have a level of capability by understanding what they do and how you've maybe solved similar problems in other organizations or helped other organizations solve those problems, and also demonstrate the highest level of integrity. You know, mm-hmm. as a young salesperson, you mentioned, Bert, that I had worked for IBM for many years, and I did. I was sitting in the audience one day of a recognition event at IBM, and the featured speaker was, and I'll never forget his name, and you'll laugh at this a little bit. His name was Buck Rogers, and he was an IBM executive who had an amazing presence. He could captivate an audience, never used any notes when he spoke. And his messages were always profound, but none more than what he said that day, and I remember it to this moment, okay? He simply said, you know, if you lose your job, it's significant. If you lose your health, it's catastrophic. But if you lose your integrity, you've lost everything. So in both my business and my personal life, I always remembered those words and have always tried to live up to that motto and maintain the highest level of integrity. And if you put those kinds of things into practice, you'll really obtain success, especially when you're dealing with executives, because they really value that integrity, that trust, and that capability. And also, when you become that trusted advisor of the executive, what's most important is the relationship starts to become collaborative. They look for ways to help you. They can help you gain access to other executives in their organization. They can introduce you to their friends, their business associates, who may have a need for your products or services. So always operate at that highest level of integrity.
Absolutely. And, you know, one of the great things that about operating at that level of integrity is you never, ever have to worry about what you did or what you said or anything like that. And,
right.
You know, when you look at some of these people that get jammed up, it's because they didn't adhere to integrity, right? They either sold out their values or whatever, you know, and I think that one of the challenges that we have here in America is that integrity, believe it or not, values, believe it or not, are not taught in business schools, and they're not emphasized as being critically important. But you know, one of my favorite people in the world to listen to and study is Warren Buffett. And, you know, Warren Buffett, one of the things that Warren Buffett is known for is his massive level of integrity. And both him and Charlie Munger are really big on this. And, you know, there was an article, and you know what, it might have been in one of his 10-Ks that I read this. And for those who are not familiar with 10K, it's their annual report. And so what had happened was the SEC had not accused Buffett or Munger of doing any wrongdoing. All they said is, when you look at the way you guys have structured your businesses, and they had you know, all these different businesses that were kind of interconnected and different holding companies and things like that, the SEC says this is a kind of structure that we typically see with people who are hiding and trying to hide assets and trying to make it difficult for the SEC to be able to see what they're all about. And it's just, you know, and so Warren was very clear. He kind of showed what the SEC was talking about, and it was just a jambalaya, if you will, of different corporations holding certain amount of different assets. And he didn't have to do anything. He wasn't accused of doing anything wrong, but because he wanted to be, you know, extremely far right, if you will, he wanted to be absolutely clear that he had nothing to hide, and he wanted to be transparent, that he and Charlie cleaned all that up. And instead of having whatever it was, seven or eight different corporations, they got it down to two, and it was very clear. Well, fast forward when, during the 2008-2007 debacle there, Goldman Sachs was in trouble, and Warren Buffett, I believe it was Goldman Sachs. Warren Buffett said that he would help them out. And because of his high level of integrity, the fact that the SEC trusted him, they just basically opened the door for him and gave him whatever he wanted so he could help out Goldman Sachs or whatever company it was. So that's kind of a big lesson to me in life, that sometimes, even though you're not doing anything wrong, you just got to be very clear of what you are doing so there is no misinterpretation.
Right, exactly. And, you know, that old parable that if you tell the truth, you have to remember less is absolutely true.
Okay? Yes.
Because some of these people get caught up in these lies, and they got to remember what they said to this person or that person that was different this day or that day. If you tell the truth, you don't have to worry about, you know, what you're telling people. You're always telling them truth, and, you know, they respect you for that. And again, it retains your integrity, and executives value that. They really do. And I can't tell you how many times in business I saw that happen where an executive would say, that person has no integrity. I don't want to deal with that person. And, you know, you don't want to be there. You don't want to be in that position. You always, if you tell the truth, and if you don't have an answer to something, tell the executive that. Look, I don't know the answer to that. I'll get back to you. And I'll get back to you very quickly and be responsive. So be responsible and responsive when you're dealing with executives. So important.
Absolutely. And since you mentioned that specific case scenario, there is a speaker, coach, individual, New York Times bestseller, Larry Wingnut, I believe is how you pronounce his last name, and he was on some TV show, I think it was Fox National type show, and here he is on the air, it's live, and they asked him a question, and he says, you know, I don't know the answer to that.
Right.
And the guy who's interviewing him says, wow. He says, that's so refreshing. You didn't try to make anything up.
right.
So, it's just so important. It sounds funny and it sounds whatever, but if you don't know, you're just so better off saying, I don't know, let me find out and I'll get back to you. And then, of course, as you said, be responsive and be responsible. Get back to them. And that's just another way that you're able to build your credibility and show them that, that you're a person of your word.
Yeah. And the other thing, one other point I'll make on that is, you know, I always try to beat the deadline that I say that I'm going to try to achieve. In other words, if I say I'll get back to you by next Wednesday, it'd really be nice if you could get them the answer by Tuesday. I always try to beat that expectation in terms of timing. And I worked for a CEO of a small company, and I saw him do that to a fault. He would always be so responsive to customers. You know, I thought, here I came from IBM. I went into this. I've only had three jobs in my career. One was with IBM. One was with a small sales training company. And the third job is in my own company where I am today, which I started about 17 years ago now. But when I was working for this small sales training company, this CEO was so responsive. I thought I was responsive at IBM, but this guy took it to another level. And his customers really loved it. So his objective, and he told me this a number of times, was I'm always out there to delight the customer, delight the client, and make them feel great. And that's what he always did. And I tried to model that, and that's what I tried to do today.
Yeah, no, I think that's great advice, great advice. All right, so, you know, we were talking about LinkedIn, and, you know, I just think that when I, you know, give me your input on this, you know, online tools, social media have really revolutionized the way, you know, executives can be contacted, the way executives even buy things. Talk about this. What are your thoughts on how all these, you know, online platforms have changed the way executives are buying now?
Well, you know, today executives have, you know, the same kind of presence on LinkedIn that I mentioned that we often have. They're using social media and tools. They're using the internet to research your products and services. It used to be that the salesperson was the expert. They knew their products and services better than any other client executive that they could reach. And information is power, okay? The internet has changed that, okay? Today, executives know a lot more about you and your products and services before you get to their front door. So you're not really the expert in a lot of cases. What you can be expert on is how you use your products and services to help achieve an objective within the client organization. How you can help them solve a problem. You may have some innovative approaches, some new ideas on how you use your products and services that can really help that client executive if you really understand their needs and requirements. And executives told us, again, as I said to you before, that they want salespeople who listen to them before proposing a solution. And that is so important, and I've seen that happen in many cases where, you know, a salesperson will go in and try to meet with an executive and try to sell them something before they really understand what that executive needs, and that is a real turnoff for executives. And again, if you're trying to sell value of your solution, executives understand value, but they may be looking at your solution and the expenditure that your products or services cost, and they may be evaluating that against a totally different type of competitor that you think you're dealing with. You might not be dealing with a traditional competitor because that executive could be looking at other uses of his or her funds. Where am I going to put this $200,000? Where am I going to get the best return on investment? Is it with your product or is it with something else? I'll never forget, I saw this article. It was on the front page of the Wall Street Journal. This was many years ago. And it was about the Union Pacific Railroad. And they were trying to make a decision as to whether they put a personal computer on the desk of every administrative person in that office, in their central office, or whether they buy a new locomotive. So if you're, you know, the Dell computer salesperson and you're selling into the Union Pacific Railroad, your competitor might not be the traditional competitor, you know, another PC dealer or supplier. It might be the person who's building locomotives. You know, so it's not the traditional competitor, because that executive is looking at other uses of funds and where they're going to get the best return on their investment. So that's what you've got to be trying to be aware of.
Yeah, no, I think it's a great insight. All right, so real quick, ladies and gentlemen, the book again is, hold on, I just misplaced
Selling
it. Is,
to the
what's that?
Selling to the C-suite.
Selling to the C-suite. And what I like about Selling to the C-suite, by the way, is the subtitle. Give them the subtitle real quick.
Yeah, it's what every executive wants you to know about successfully selling to the top, because the book was written from the executive's perspective, not from the salesperson's perspective of this is the best trick or this is the best way to, you know, get there. This is what executives told us was the best way to sell to them.
Absolutely. All right, Stephen, I'm going to put you on the spot here. We only got a couple of minutes to go, but I have a couple of questions for you.
Sure.
So here you are. You went from IBM to what do we call it, a sales training company, to launching your own company. And,
right.
You know, so one of my questions to you is, how do you deal with fear? I mean, obviously, you're leaving IBM to start a new venture, and then you left that venture to start even, your own venture. So how do you deal with fear when it taps you on the shoulder?
Right. Well, I think it comes down to one word, and that's confidence. You've got to have the confidence that you have the ability to do something. You have that confidence to do something different, perhaps, to do something a little bit unique, and that's what I thought I had. And it was built up over a period of time. You know, I worked for IBM, and then after working for this small sales training company, I was developing training programs for that company to sell to other companies. In fact, we sold our solution back to IBM, okay, and actually trained over 30,000 IBM professional salespeople around the world with a solution that I helped develop at this small sales training company. And after I did that, I said, well, you know, I could do this myself. I had the confidence that I can go out there and market some of these programs, these sales training programs, to help other companies. And I had a little bit of a different perspective on some things. I had done this research with senior-level executives, again, where I asked them about their, you know, their relationships with professional salespeople. And I said, hey, I can do this myself. I can build this workshop, and I can sell it to other companies. And that's what I did. And
I love it.
It came down to confidence. You know, you have the confidence
in
what you're doing. And you also have to have a network. You have to have a network of people who know about you and know about you from a professional level. And it's all about that integrity I talked about, because I'd be working with people now and they say, well, you know, I know that Steve operates at the highest level of integrity. I want to work with him as opposed to my competitor, perhaps.
Right. Okay. Let's see. Do you have a personal self-talk, mantra, affirmation, or self-belief that contributes to your success?
Well, you know, this level of integrity that I told you about before, you know, listening to Buck Rogers and his talk, it has stayed with me. And my model for doing things the way I do things today is the CEO that I work with in this small sales training company. He taught me a lot about working with clients and, again, you know, getting that credibility with clients so that I become perceived as that trusted advisor. And, you know, you're not going to be able to achieve that objective with every executive you work with. Why not? Well, for one thing, it takes time, effort, and energy to do that, number one. The second thing is, not all executives out there want that level of relationship. Some of them will have a little bit more of a standoffish relationship, and you've got to figure that out. You've got to figure out what executives you want to work with and where you want to spend your time and maximize your efforts also. So it's a kind of a two-way street in developing that trusted advisor level relationship. It's got to be people you want to work with. It's got to be people who want to work with you, who you're dealing with. So you've got to, you know, you've got to make some trade-offs in establishing those relationships.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. All right. Let's see. Parting word of advice.
Well, be true to yourself. You know, always tell the truth. You'll have to remember less. And, you know, like I said before, executives buy not when they understand, but when they feel they are understood. And also preparation and homework before you meet with that executive is so critical and so easy in today's environment. And, you know, I was observing a sales training program delivery by one of my facilitators a couple of years ago, and I'll never forget the comment that she made to the audience in terms of preparation. And she said, you know, your preparation will either get you in or do you in.
So, I like that.
So think about that as you're preparing for that critical call on the client executive. Your homework will either get you in or do you in.
Yeah, I love that. All right, final word before we end the show. How can my listeners get a hold about you or find out more about you?
Okay, very easy. It's sellxl.com. I think of it as sell extra large. sellxl.com is my website, and there you'll find a way to contact me. steveb@sellxl.com is the easiest way to get to me, and you can contact me anytime, and I'd be happy to talk to you about doing a workshop for your salespeople or your sales team in your company. I'd love to do it.
I love it. Steve B. I love that. Selling to the C-suite is his best-selling book, available on Amazon or wherever you like to buy your favorite books. Stephen Bistris, thank you so much for stopping by.
Oh, love to be with you. I enjoyed it, really. Thanks so much, Bert. Take care.
You bet. Good stuff there from Stephen Bistris. Selling to the C-Suite is the name of the book. Lots of good nuggets in today's show, from the best way to gain access to identifying the executive for the sales opportunity to, I like what he said about the executives are not going to buy until they feel that they are understood. And I like the fact that he used the word feel, because we all buy feelings, believe it or not. We buy feelings of trust, feelings, as he said, of being understood. We buy feelings of confidence that this solution and this person can take care of me. These are the feelings that your customers buy time and time and time again. So, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for stopping by today. Please, let's help as many people as we can reach these executives. Please share the show with as many people as you can. It's a big benefit to them, and it allows me to help as many people as possible. As always, thank you so much for stopping by and listening to the show. Remember, you were created to succeed.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch, and check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.